Question 60. A defender takes a free kick just outside of his penalty area. He plays the ball back to his goalkeeper, who unbeknown to the defender is lying injured on the ground. The ball is making its way towards goal when the same defender manages to intercept it, but in doing so, the defender slices at the ball that then crosses the goal line between the goal posts and into the goal. Does the goal count? Answer 60. No. A goal has not been legitimately scored, as a player cannot play the ball a second time at such a restart, and an indirect free kick must be awarded. The normal restart by law 13 for touching the ball a second time after taking a free kick is for the opposing team to be awarded an indirect free kick to be taken at the place where the defender touched the ball for a second time. If the defender touched the ball a second time inside the goal area, then the indirect free kick should be taken from that part of the goal area line which runs parallel to the goal line at the point nearest to where the defender touched the ball a second time. Notwithstanding the above, an astute referee will have noticed that the goalkeeper is injured and blow his whistle to stop play straight away before any of the above action ensues. UK/RA. Question 61. If a defending player taking a free kick just outside of his own penalty area kicks the ball back towards his goalkeeper, but his goalkeeper misses the ball with his foot, but makes contact on the ball with his hands before it crosses his own goal line and into the net dash, what should the referee do? Is it an indirect free kick for touching the ball after receiving it directly from a kick from his teammate, i.e. a back pass, or should the goal be awarded? Answer 61. As in the above question, Law 5 allows the referee to apply advantage and allow play to continue after an offense. Handling of the ball by the goalkeeper after receiving it from a teammate has been committed, thus benefiting the team that the offense had been committed against. The goal should therefore be allowed to count. Question 62. If a goalkeeper holding the ball within his own penalty area throws the ball to a teammate who is also standing in the penalty area, then the teammate miskicks the ball and it enters the goal after being handled by the goalkeeper, is this a goal? Answer 62. Yes. The referee should allow play to continue as no infringement had occurred. The miskick by the defender is not a deliberate act and therefore cannot be deemed to be a deliberate back pass, so it is irrelevant whether the goalkeeper handles the ball or not. The goal should still be awarded. Question 63. From John Stockman, the 28th of January, 2001. What does it mean when a referee puts his elbows in the air and starts waving them about? Answer 63. This is not a standard recognized referee signal, but it usually refers to when a referee has blown for a foul and is indicating to others that a player had held another player down whilst trying to jump up to head the ball. This usually happens when a high ball is coming towards two opposing players who are challenging for the ball with their head. Then one of the players, usually the one standing behind, puts his hands on the shoulders of the player in front and uses his shoulders as leverage to lift himself higher, or prevents the player in front of him from jumping up properly by holding him down by the shoulders. This is not a widely recognized signal, but nonetheless is used by some referees. Thanks to John for an interesting question. Question 64. Teams playing in a Christian league normally have connections with the church in some way. If the club secretary of the home team informs the referee that the football is of a high standard, but if any player uses the phrases, "Oh God," or "Christ's ache," the referee will be asked by the Christian League to issue a red card for foul and abusive language, as suggested by the Christian League rules. If this situation arises, should the referee be stricter, and can the discipline report be passed to the Christian League for action, as opposed to sending it to the normal county discipline secretary for action? Answer 64. The official line is that any football team playing within a county should be affiliated to that county's football association. All the players belonging to that team must also be registered with the county FOP before they can play. As such, church-type leagues are no different to any other league and come under the jurisdiction of their county football association in all matters, including discipline. A qualified referee should not officiate outside of his county without first obtaining permission from his parent county FOP, the one that he is registered with. It is also a matter of courtesy for referees to inform their parent county before officiating elsewhere. Some church-type league rules are more stringent towards improving discipline standards than those off normal league status. Nevertheless, church type leagues should adhere to the same standards as everyone else. Any suggestion that disciple will be dealt by the church league themselves, as opposed to sending in discipline reports to the normal county discipline secretary, is not legal. Registered county referees must send any discipline reports to the county discipline secretary, and not to the church league secretary for action. Church type leagues may try and persuade referees to be stricter when dealing with swearing and dissent. Although one cannot deny the principles behind this, one of the hardest things for a referee to learn is consistency. And in this matter, a referee should not be stricter with a church team on a Saturday than he would be with a normal league team playing the following day on a Sunday morning. Problems will also arise when a player disciplined for saying, "O Christ," whilst playing for a church team on a Saturday, also plays for his local pub team on a Sunday morning. Where such an expletive will most probably be ignored by most referees. If he repeats the "O Christ" on the Sunday whilst playing for the pub team, will the same referee take the same action? I doubt it. If the same referee has to officiate in both games, he leaves himself open to applying double standards, and this cannot be allowed to happen. Notwithstanding the above, the sentiments of the church type leagues must be admired. Any move to install discipline and to cut down swearing and dissent must be a good move. The problem the referee has is in fulfilling the church league expectations for acting swiftly to deal with swearing and dissent. The level of swearing and dissent should really be a matter for the church league to promote, as undoubtedly they do. The referee should not be expected to follow the church league sentiments without falling into the trap of using double standards when dealing with discipline. It is a sad fact that the factory language of football has reached an unprecedented level of acceptance. It's a great pity that the standards of the church leagues cannot be imposed on all of the other leagues. Question 65. When a goalkeeper who has released the ball at his feet purposefully picks it up again to prevent an oncoming nearby challenging attacker gaining possession and shooting towards goal, should the referee send off the goalkeeper for denying a goal-scoring opportunity and restart with an indirect free kick, or should the referee just give the goalkeeper a caution and restart with an indirect free kick for touching the ball a second time after he has released it? Answer 65. As the ball was clearly in control of the goalkeeper and not the oncoming player, it is not a clear goal-scoring opportunity. An indirect free kick should be awarded. The additional punishment of a caution is not automatic. If the referee considers that the goalkeeper has gained an unfair advantage over his opponent, he would judge this as unsporting behavior and caution him. When a goalkeeper handles the ball whilst in his own penalty area, in violation of the laws, as in the above question, the punishment is an indirect free kick and not a penalty kick. Because a goalkeeper is allowed to handle the ball in his own penalty area, he cannot therefore be sent off for stopping an obvious goal-scoring opportunity by illegal use of his hands in his own penalty area. The goalkeeper can of course be sent off for stopping an obvious goal-scoring opportunity by other fouls, or if he stops an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, by handling the ball outside of his penalty area. Question 66. Is an over-the-top or over-the-ball tackle that does not connect with an opponent's leg deemed to be an indirect free kick for dangerous play or a direct free lick for a penal offense, i.e. attempting to kick an opponent? Answer 66. Direct free kick or penalty, depending where the offense occurred and by whom. The disciplinary action will rely on the referee's view of the severity of the offense. This is classified under the penal offenses, kicking or attempting to kick an opponent. Question 67. As you know, it is impossible to slide tackle someone without having your studs facing the ball. I know that this isn't normally a foul when tackling from one side. But what happens if an attacker is running towards a defender, who in turn is running towards the attacker? The defender slide tackles with one foot, taking the ball, but sending the attacker flying. In my view, if you touch the ball, it shouldn't be a foul. What is your view? Answer 67. Firstly, you can slide tackle with your knee. A slide tackle does not necessarily have to involve the studs facing the ball. For example, you can also slide tackle with the toes pointed downwards, with the studs facing the grass. Referees should always penalize slide tackles when they are done in such a way that they jeopardize the safety of the opponent. It does not matter whether the ball is touched first or not. Only just last night, the 26th of March, 2001, in the English Nationwide Division 1 game West Bromwich Albion v Tranmere Rovers, the referee penalized two such slide tackles, neither of which made contact with the opponent, but both made in a reckless way using excessive force, Law 12. It does not matter whether the defender touches the ball or not, it is the fact that the attacker is sent flying that decides whether the referee will penalize him or not. If two opposing players are running towards each other, and one of them decides to make a slide tackle from the front him, then this is most certainly reckless and undoubtedly involves excess force. If a referee decides not to immediately penalize such action, then he will give the green light for players to make reckless tackles during the rest of the game. And this cannot be allowed to happen. Making contact firstly with the ball is normally accepted. But it is not accepted if the tackle is done in such a way that the tackling player, although in law making a clean tackle, undoubtedly aims to inflict some damage to the opponent. The strength and outcome of the tackle will gauge what action the referee can take. A strong talking to. B. A caution for unsporting behavior, tackle made in a reckless way using excessive force. C. A sending off, serious foul play, even if the ball was touched first, if the tackle is done in such a way that the ball is a secondary consideration and inflicting injury to the opponent is the first. These types of tackles are very easy to recognize and should be penalized accordingly. Just because a tackling player makes contact with the ball first, this does not mean that every tackle is legal. For example, a player who makes a reckless tackle but touched the ball before he touched the opponent should be penalized. Touching the ball first does not necessarily give the tackling player a get-out-of-jail card. The often heard shout of "but I played the ball, ref," does not necessarily mean free immunity for the perpetrator. The 26th of March, 2001. Great question from Tommy, many thanks. Question 68. If a player deliberately runs into the referee, what actions should he take? Answer 68. The referee is a part of the field of play, so it could be argued that no offense has occurred. E.g., if a player purposefully ran into a goalpost, this would not be deemed as an offense. You might think that the player is barking mad, but all players are slightly touched anyway. As rumor has it that the referee was once a human being and not born in Earth, the perspective is somewhat different. If a player purposefully runs into the referee, the first question is, was it done to harm the referee? I have been involved with players jokingly running into me and I have reacted in a similar way and just laughed it off. Yes, referees do have a sense of humor. If a player purposefully bumps into the referee, then the severity, speed, whether the action influenced the game, whether it was done whilst the ball was in play or not, etc., etc., all need to be taken into consideration before the referee makes a decision. There are four actions that the referee can take. 1. Do nothing. 2. Give the player verbal roasting for being a prat. 3. Caution the player for unsporting behavior. 4. Send the player off for violent conduct. Law 12 fouls and misconduct allow the referee a huge amount of discretion when making decisions covering discipline. For example, unsporting conduct can cover anything from farting to larking about. Nevertheless, it is the referee's duty, Law 5, to take the appropriate disciplinary action against irresponsible players. Another factor for the referee to consider is the player's size in contrast to the referee. For example, I weigh 16 stone, am over 6 feet tall, and built like a solid brick house. A punitive bump by a 7 stone weakling or a 7-year-old player is not likely to have much effect on me. I would probably not even notice it in the course of battle. Conversely, a 16 stone player bumping into a 7 stone referee will just as likely flatten the referee like a cow pancake. Notwithstanding all this, it is the act itself, and not the severity, that must be primarily considered. Purposefully bumping into the referee is deemed to be violent conduct warranting a red card. But as mentioned above, a great deal of Law 18 common sense must be applied before taking the appropriate action. There is no easy solution, and each referee will react differently. If a player accidentally runs into the referee, then there is not much that the referee can do except shout "ouch." As a mobile part of the field of play, the referee is responsible for getting out of the way during play situations. I have been bumped into accidentally on many occasions, and each one has been properly ignored with a touch of humor. If players berate me for being the way, then I agree with them, and try even harder to stay out wide from the play action areas. Now, what about those situations where the referee runs into a player? Now that is a different question altogether. Thanks to Dave Larder of Bulldogs Unleashed Western Australia for the interesting question. Question 69. In the cases when a goalkeeper illegally handles the ball, thus denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, should compassion be used by referees in a youth contest, i.e. can the referee ignore the first occurrence of this offense and just teach the keeper about the law? Answer 69. Although the sentiments above are understandable, there are many factors that make the statement very complex to apply fairly. For example, at what age would you start applying the law correctly? What action would you take in a mixed age team, and how would you know the ages of each player? What would you do, as a referee, say, if you fail to apply the law to a 16-year-old goalkeeper playing in a youth team on a Saturday, and the same player repeated a similar offense whilst he was playing for an adult under-18 team the next day? By not applying the law correctly, young players will expect to be treated the same when they get older, and if they are not, will undoubtedly protest to the referee. Albeit that some leniency and understanding must be shown during throw-ins and kick-offs when very young players are concerned, the goal-scoring opportunity is a serious offense that can immediately affect the result of a game, and should therefore always be penalized properly. Ignoring such incidents will inevitably lead to serious problems with astute parents and coaches. Compassion in youth games is a two-edged sword that the referee needs to use very, very carefully. It relies on the goodwill of the coaches, managers, players, parents, and spectators. And goodwill can turn nasty in an instance. As a general rule, goal-scoring opportunities should be penalized properly at all ages, else trouble is surely waiting around the next corner. When a goalkeeper handles the ball whilst in his own penalty area, in violation of the laws, the punishment is an indirect free kick and not a penalty kick. For example, when he handles the ball after receiving it directly from a colleague taking a throw-in. Because a goalkeeper is allowed to handle the ball in his own penalty area, he cannot therefore be sent off for stopping an obvious goal-scoring opportunity by illegal use of his hands in his own penalty area. The goalkeeper can of course be sent off for stopping an obvious goal-scoring opportunity by other fouls, or if he stops an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, by handling the ball outside of his penalty area. Many thanks to Carl Arps, first-year licensed referee in the US, for this interesting question. Question 70. If a referee awards a foul, but is unable to positively identify the exact player that committed the foul, what should he do? Answer 70. When awarding fouls, it can sometimes happen that although the referee has awarded the correct decision, the speed and entanglement of nearby players, and the fact that players are all dressed the same, can prevent the referee identifying the individual perpetrator of the incident. In such cases, the referee still has a duty to act positively in penalizing the offending team. There is no stipulation in the laws that require the referee to positively identify every culprit. However, recognizing who the culprit is can allow the referee to take the appropriate action, such as having a quiet word or issuing a caution, etc. Notwithstanding this, any inquiries from dissenting players to positively identify who committed the foul must be quickly and strongly dealt with. The referee should not waver, he should not succumb to the badgering of players seeking identification, and he has no obligation in law to identify the unidentifiable. As is often the case, decisions made by referees are honest decisions made at that particular time. Referees who penalize a team have no option but to apply the correct punishment. There is no other alternative. If approached by players seeking positive identification, the referee is advised to back off slowly a couple of yards, at the same time telling the oncoming players in a loud voice to move away. Using the back off arm/hand signal, similar to that used when shooing chickens or cows away. During incidents of this nature, referees are not advised to discuss anything with players. Doing so will only lead to further trouble. So long as you know your decision and the punishment you award is correct, what else can a referee do? Not knowing for sure who did the foul should not negate the advantage of the free kick if deserved. Question 71. An attacker and defender left the pitch during the momentum of the game, and the ball remained in play. As the attacker tries to re-enter the field of play, the defender holds him back. As this incident is off the pitch and the ball is in play, what decision should a referee make regarding this incident? Answer 71. Sanctioned by the UK RA. If an advantage can be applied, the referee should allow play to continue, and during the next stoppage in play caution the defender and show the yellow card for unsporting behavior. Where no advantage is to be gained, then the referee should stop play, caution the defender, and show the yellow card for unsporting behavior, and restart play with the drop ball from the place where it was at the time of stopping the game. Question 72. Should referees be made to do penance for mistakes made in games? For example, as happened during a Norwich City game in season 2000/2001, where a midfielder committed a second yellow offence, the referee dealt with an injured player first, then went to send off the offending player. Unfortunately, a defender with the same hairstyle had walked up the pitch and was sent off by mistake. Okay, his sending off was rescinded later, but what if he was the star man of the game, and they lost because of his sending off? Would the club have right of appeal against the loss? Answer 72. As far as the laws themselves are concerned, Law 5 clearly states that the decisions of the referee connected with play are final. That's it really as far as referees are concerned. What the question really alludes to is how much money could be lost following a genuine honest refereeing mistake, as far as the commercial business of that particular club is concerned. 20 to 30 years ago, people would have accepted the honest mistake. Sadly, these days, money and success are the only factors that seem to count. Whatever happened to the spirit of the game? Albeit that these days, there may be some mileage in the sentiments. Far be it for a single person to make a judgment that all the wisdom of Solomon, plus an FA panel of judges, and a number of independent adjudicators would take weeks to decide, if at all. The outcome of which could have serious repercussions on the game itself. Why can't people just accept that mistakes will be made, instead of bullying every referee that so much as farts in a game? This is not really a referee-type question. The answer lies with the decision-making football authorities. At the end of every game, referees have done their bit honestly at that particular time. You can't ask for any more than that, surely. I suppose it is only a matter of time before one of the goalkeepers or players is made to pay for letting in a goal that relegates his team from the Premier League. And how many unpunished or talked about mistakes do they make in a year? More than referees, I'll warrant. We are very much in danger of losing perspective over what in essence is still a game. Imagine the furor that would occur if one team's relegation was rescinded by a panel of so-called judges at a later date, at the expense of another innocent team, who get relegated instead. World War III comes to mind. Question 73. Will technology enhance the game? Answer 73. Albeit that I, webmaster, can understand the commercial reasons for advocating the use of technology. I'm not personally in favor of any technology being used myself. There has been talk particularly of using camera technology to decide if a ball crosses the line for a goal or not. This is all well and good at the top level, but what about the majority of referees who officiate at park level, where such technology will never be used? I am a great advocate that genuine mistakes made by the match officials and the players are a fundamental part of the game itself, and this is why it has such a massive worldwide following. Take away the mistakes, and you might as well stay at home and mow the lawn. Microphones and earpieces were experimented with in England during most of the 1999/2000 seasons. It lasted a while, but match officials now generally do without them. Referees with their ears taped up and assistants talking to their flags made them vulnerable to more ridicule. I believe that technology needs to advance further to make such methods less intrusive and more comfortable for the users. Referees were very often seen adjusting their tapped earpieces, and this can only detract from the referee's main task of concentrating on the game itself. The buzzing armband seemed to work for a while. During offsides, the assistant referee would press a button on his flag stick that in turn would vibrate a concealed armband on the referee's arm. Before long, we will have remote controls that can be passed out to allow spectators control of the referee himself. Whatever next? I suppose that one day, we might even have video evidence that will be used to change the result of a game, because the player who scored the goal was 10 centimeters offside. I think we are heading down a very slippery slope with the utilization of technology, especially if our decisions are constantly overruled by the opinion of some glorified machine or a panel who sits 2 days after the game has finished. Question 74. It was noticed during a match that 2 illegal substitutions were made, and the substitutes entered the field of play at different times during the game, without first notifying the referee or the assistant referee. In the first instance, and after the referee had realized what had happened, the referee issued a strong warning to the substitute. In the second instance, the referee decided to issue a caution to the second substitute, who had entered the field of play without the referee's permission. Surely the referee should have cautioned both the substitutes, and not just the second substitute. Answer 74. It is not very often that amateur players will purposefully cheat by entering substitutes without informing the referee. Law 3, number of players, specifically states that a player should be cautioned if he enters the field of play without first obtaining the referee's permission. In this first instance, the referee has used common sense and gave the benefit of doubt to the substitute, who probably did not have a clue about the correct procedure to be used. The referee should be allowed to use his good judgment by simply warning the player after the first instance. If players continue to cheat after being warned by the referee, as in the second instance, then the perpetrator should be definitely cautioned. Of course, this only applies to junior or park levels of football. Senior players know all about the Law 3 regulations concerning substitutions, so any misdemeanor of Law 3 by them should be punished at the first instance by the obligatory yellow card. Question 75. If a goalkeeper controls the ball by balancing it on his head, using a gentle rolling to keep it in place, is he deemed to have it under his possession, and is an opposing player allowed to challenge him? Answer 75. This is a clever question that paradoxically has a simple answer. The only thing that a goalkeeper can use in his penalty area that other players cannot are his hands. Apart from that, he is just the same as any other player. So ask yourself this. If a player, not a goalkeeper, had the ball balancing on top of his head, is another player legally entitled to make a play for it, for example, by jumping up and heading it off? Of course he is. And the same goes for a deft goalkeeper who balances the ball on his foot. As soon as the goalkeeper releases the ball from his hands, it becomes fair game for an attacking player to make a play for it. So if he decides to place it on the top of his head, it is very likely that it is not only the ball that will be knocked off his shoulders. Question 76. I went to watch a game the other day. Why can't referees be consistent? Answer 76. Consistency is not just what it says on the tin. Take 2 similar tackles by player and player for the same team. Player fouls an opponent and the referee just has a quiet word with him. Player commits a similar foul 5 minutes later, and the referee shows him a yellow card. Inconsistency or what? Rubbish. A spectator in the stands has no idea what grief and dissent and whinnying player has been giving the referee throughout the match. And neither does the spectator keep a tally of minor infringements committed previously by player. The tackle by player is cautioned quite correctly under Law 12, because player persistently infringed the laws of the game. But to you in the stand, this looks like inconsistency, because the 2 tackles were similar. What I am trying to point out to you is that consistency is not quite so easy to understand as you make it out to be. You only see what you see, and not what the referee sees or hears.